kind of lay a little foundation here. And again, I'm keeping my eye on you guys. I'm pulling this back a little bit. So if you just kind of, I'm going to see you. And if not, Alan, hit me. Okay. Three purposes for this. Well, actually, we want to develop a whole seminar and do this over a weekend. So this is just kind of our step one. We have so much more material to cover, but we were just a little teaser before you went away for the summer, so many IFU students. So I give our three purposes. We want to give a biblical view, and we want to create a larger dialogue, an in-depth dialogue based on the Bible, not based on our culture. We want to establish some clearly defined boundary lines. And the reason we need to really clearly define them, because a lot of folks, they imagine without clearly defined boundary lines, they're just going to kind of make their way through by the Spirit, and they've never thought through everything and a lot of situations, and they get there and they end up stumbling. So we want to think through and actually write down our boundary lines, write them down. That's where we're going in a few moments. Then I want to expose some false idealism, although we're not going to do, so much of that tonight, but I do have a lot of that on the handout, the larger one that we'll put on the internet later. Paragraph four, there are four issues that cause great pressure on marriage. Very common. You can read those. They're pretty simple. It's straightforward. But idealism's a big one. Idealism hurts so many marriages because they have these concepts that it's supposed to be this way and it's not supposed to be that way. Then they get disillusioned, then they get angry, then they start backing away from the relationship. Okay, paragraph C, obviously the foundation of a godly marriage is two people that are equally yoked. Meaning, equally yoked doesn't mean they're just both of them are believers, but they're like-minded. They have the same values. They're going towards the Lord with the same intensity. If you're not equally yoked, if he's like really good looking, but you're not equally yoked, you will have so many problems after about 3 months when his good looks are not going to get you through anything, or her good looks. If you're not equally yoked, there will be so many added tensions that will come for the next 50 years. So that's one of the main priorities. Paragraph D is the guy that or gal that you're dating or wanting to marry, do they have the same vision you have? Are they searching the scriptures to figure out how to be more committed to the Lord? Or are they searching the scriptures to find out ways to be less committed? Because there's two camps in the body of Christ. And you might be really attracted to somebody, but they're in the camp, they're reading the Bible to try to find out how to give themselves to the Lord less. And that is a dangerous thing. No matter how cool their phrases are, that is dangerous. Next 10, 20, 30, 40 years on your marriage, your children, your sexuality, your everything. That is a dangerous, dangerous thing that needs to be identified.
And I think, Mike, on that one, you know that the verse and the two shall become one flesh. The kind of pressure and the kind of challenges you're going to face together as God conforms you into his likeness are too great for just the casual believer, for the one that just wants to show up, be counted in, get fire insurance so that they make sure they have everlasting life, but they really haven't bought into the fact that their life is about being conformed into the likeness of Christ. Marriage will break down this point that he just said right there. When no one's looking, are they pressing in for Jesus? Not just to get fire insurance, but are they wanting to be conformed? Because their wife or their husband will be the reminder of their weaknesses and failings every day, all day. And if they don't want to conform into the likeness of Jesus, marriage is just too painful to go through with someone else as a mirror in front of you all the time.
Yeah, and you spend your money different. You approach sexuality different. You approach child raising different. You approach entertainment different. You approach problem solving in your marriage differently. You approach everything different. You have different entertainment. You have different friends. I mean, everything is based on this reality. And to think that attraction will get you through those problems for 50 years if you have two different visions, it is a disaster. After, you know, having been a pastor about 40 years, it is a disaster every time.
So dating doesn't fit as a category in evangelism.
No, right. No missionary dating. Okay. Paragraph E, It talks about, I love this phrase in 1 Thessalonians 4. Just look at it in verse 4. It's talking about abstaining from immorality in verse 3. But he says, learn how, or know how to, which means learn, to possess your body in honor. Paul exhorts us that because all of us need to know our body, our rhythm, how our bodies respond in various situations when we're in certain moods, in certain time frames, when certain context, you respond differently to temptation. And Paul's saying, learn how to possess your body in a way where you can walk in honor. When you're depressed, it's late at night, and you're in this context, don't go there and do that because you'll always mess up. It's not the same as another time in your life when you're not depressed and the pressure's on. So learn how to possess yourself and know how to read all the situations in your life and how they add up to leading you to a place of vulnerability, and stay out of those places of temptation when you get in that place. But this is not a holiness teaching tonight, but that's a really key a verse, to learn how to possess your body in honor. Now here's what I want to spend some time on, a minute or two. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 6. There's so much deception in the body of Christ today, not just in the culture, in the church, related to immorality. The Bible is clear that we are to resist, believers are to resist all sexual involvement outside of the covenant of marriage between one man and one woman. There is no other sexual activity that is blessed by God, ordained by God, except for inside the covenant of the marriage of one man and one woman. That's the clear, biblical, no questions asked. There's no way to get around that. And a lot of guys are trying to move those boundary lines around, but they're very, very clear in the Bible. Paul says in verse 9, don't be deceived about this, that fornicators, idolaters, adulterers, homosexuals, sodomites will not inherit the kingdom, is what he's saying. Don't be deceived. Now, a lot of times we look at that verse and we think, homosexuals will not inherit the kingdom. They will not. I want to be clear about that, but I don't want to leave it there. We're talking about an unrepentant person who's walking in that behavior, but we're missing the point. It says fornicators won't be. There's a whole lot more heterosexual fornication going on in the body of Christ than there is homosexual activity. And so there's a lot of debate with this verse about homosexual. I go, wait, that's way down the line. It says fornication. It's talking about young, cool couples, young people in the body of Christ that really are cool and like each other, and they're stepping over lines. And the Lord says, if that is an acceptable lifestyle to you, you have cast off my leadership in your life. And it doesn't mean you stumble and fall, you're out of the kingdom, but it's choices where you stay in that kind of mindset. It leads to a hardness of heart down the road. So it's talking not about stumbling in these sins, but it's about settling into those sins. And so fornication is the first one on the list, and that's all sex outside of the covenant of marriage between one man and one woman. Okay, let's look at paragraph F. Now, Diane, this is something that you were really emphasizing earlier.
Yeah. I feel like, especially for those of you who are here, our young people that are here, you are in an environment, the prayer room, you're in an environment that fosters getting physically and spiritually and emotionally healed up. You're in an environment where you hear the song of the Lord and the word of the Lord, and you're encouraged to go deep in the word. And all of those things are happening around you and to you, and you're participating in them. And it is the time for you to get stronger in your character, to get stronger in your true identity of who you are in the Lord and how He feels about you, and to put aside some of those broken things that are of your past, and to deal with some of that brokenness. And so I just feel like the gift of the Lord to those of you who are here in terms of preparing you for marriage is that you're in an environment every day where you can take the word of the Lord and process together with the Lord in the prayer room these issues of pain, of disappointment, of brokenness, of broken sexuality issues. You know, the Lord wants us to take the truth and apply it to our life today in this moment. And so I want to encourage you that the times that you have in the prayer room to be serious and intentional before the Lord with your scripture reading. You know, I am dark, but I am lovely to you, Jesus. And so those dark parts of me that you know all about, that I hope no one ever finds out about me, that, but you know them, Jesus, come in and heal those places in me. And show me another way. Show me a better way that when I am faced with that choice the next time, I will make a different choice because you've washed me and you've given me help and you've strengthened me. So use this time to prepare yourself to be the best self, the best whole self. I mean, we're never perfectly whole, but get healed up.
You're close.
Get healed up as fast as you can and avail yourself to some of the tools that we have here available for you with our foundation's ministry. And, you know, get some wise counselors alongside of you, speaking over you and helping you.
And you were saying that's the best way you can prepare for marriage right there.
Prepare, make yourself the most whole, best self that you can be. Bring that to the courtship. Bring that into the engagement. You want that from the person that you're going to connect with, and that person wants that from you. There's no better way to start a solid foundation in the Lord and merging your vision and your values than to come into it with a place of health.
And there's no better time if you've moved here from back home to come here for college, internship, intro, whatever it is you moved here for. This is a new place. And that's the beauty of college. I don't know how a lot of you felt who are older, but I know that when I went to college, it was a push delete. It's a new start. It's to shake off the shame and the failures of the past and to see what God would unfold in those little things. You know, when you first got saved, He would move it upon your heart to pick up a piece of trash when you walked by it on the ground, and the Spirit would convict you. And you'd have a choice. You're like, it's a little piece of trash. But the Spirit would go, it matters to me. Because it's the yieldedness of your heart. And I would encourage you, push delete and let the joy and the delight of God conforming you by His Spirit. Because there's nothing more attractive, at least I can only speak from a guy's perspective, than a woman who's going hard after God. No matter her past, who's pressing in to say, Jesus, I'm yielded to you. And I want to be conformed to your likeness. That's beauty, and that's the drawing power.
Turn to page 2. Yeah, Alan, that's good. No, that pick up that trash. See, we're 37 years married. She just says, pick up that trash, and I do it. I used to be the other way.
Brother, turn.
I used to just hear it from the Lord. Now I get help. Top of page 2, the 3 definitions. Now, I'm using the word courtship in a way that some of you would use it very differently. So let me define it. Courtship, I'm using for the word engagement. That might be confusing. So dating or engagement is what I mean, or marriage. So I was talking to some earlier. They were saying, nah, that word means courtship and dating sounds like the same. And I go, no, I mean officially you put the ring on, you've announced your wedding date. That's what I mean by courtship. And so I'm going to change that word out on the document. Okay, I'm identifying or just talking real brief about 3 stages. And the real point we're talking about is the dating stage, because the other two are pretty obvious what they're about. Paragraph B, the premise of how relationships work, marriage works, is the fact that love is built on respect. It's not built on physical appearance. I mean, a physical appearance, attractive physical appearance is nice. But I tell you, physical appearance will not sustain love. It won't cause it to flourish. 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years later, you love one another because your respect has grown, not because your hair is prettier 40 years later. In your case, it is, but worth almost 40 years later. That was that. I just
it is true. We married up.
Yeah, we married up. Go ahead. You're going to say something.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I'm making a serious point, though. Okay?
I know.
Okay.
I'm going to make one, too.
Okay, good.
Respect, and you respect someone when they're real and authentic and they're making good godly choices with their life. And so I just want to make the point that I respect and love this man way more than I did 37 years ago when I married him, because I've been able to watch him through the years and through the trials and through the highs and the lows. And I just, yeah, that's the gift of God, that you get to grow in love with someone who's the real deal. So, hey, let's all be as real as we possibly can and as true, you know, walking in our true self and in our true identity and getting, getting healed up from wrong and false identities so that we can really enjoy married life together. It's meant to be enjoyed. And I want to say this, the guy that you see on Friday nights and Saturday nights and Sunday mornings up here on the platform, it's the same guy that I see at home on a Monday morning at 7 o'clock in the morning. He's the same. He's just true all the way through. And that would be my desire, that every one of you guys could say that in your later married years, like, I got the real deal. And he presented himself. He was authentic and he held the line and walked that standard before the Lord and led my heart in righteousness and holiness all of these years.
Thank you. But there's still a little physical going on. Come on. I mean, I've lost some, but... No, the point I'm making, we have lots of fun, we laugh a lot, but the point I'm making is that when you're in your 20s, and although we're not only talking about folks in their 20s, though that's the crowd we're aiming at the IHOPU student body, are mostly in their 20s, not everybody. But there's a lot of folks dating in their 50s, and so I'm talking to them as well. But the idea is there's so much attention on physical attraction, and physical attraction is cool. I think that's something, but if that is too big of the equation, if you do not 10, 20, 30 years later respect the way they handle pressure, the way they talk, the way they walk in the mundane routine of life, trying to obey the Lord, be a servant heart, you won't love them. Like one of the questions, we got lots of questions given to us. How do you know if the love is real, and how do you know it will last? If you grow in respect because you're both living authentic, not perfect, but you're stumbling, but you're genuine when you're tired, you're genuine when you're doing your entertainment, you're genuine for the Lord, you will love each other more. You won't fall out of love. Matter of fact, that those fireworks when you first met and you were just, everybody was so cute, your love will actually get way beyond that. It will go way beyond that if it's when the respect is based in. So when I first met her, she was so gorgeous, like, oh, make anything work. You're so cute. But it doesn't work that way. It really, really doesn't work that way because I had baby respect because we hadn't had history. 10 years later, 20 years later, 30 years later, 37 years later, my respect is so great, and that's where affection and love, but I mean genuine affection. I don't mean just a cold, distant, I respect you, you're technically right. Isn't that nice? I'm talking about genuine affection and love within a relationship. That's how it's built.
And I was just going to add that something that's beautiful, that's grievous, and I know all of you would agree, that oftentimes marriages get to 25 years, and they're going through the crisis, and instead of running into the Lord and letting the benefit of those years that can come forth and does come forth happen, they give up. And so there's a benefit of years that you, as you've walked through different seasons and hardships, because marriage is the cross. And you really realize in those things that, oh my gosh, I have issues. He has issues. Jesus, we need you. Let's run into you. And so I just was going to say the beauty of years, like 37 years, 22 years for us, of that you come into the benefits that are such a blessing. You know, anyway.
But that's if you've chosen right for 22 years. That only works if you've done that.
And Rachel says this over and over, and here's what I want to just vouch, that we're more in love with each other now, way more at the 22-year mark than we were at year one. And
year
here's
one,
why.
You were crazy about her, right?
She was the knockout of the whole school. And so
I've heard him go on and on. My point being, it's so much beyond.
I mean, look at her. She looks like my little sister. Okay. I mean, you know what? I'm walking through the grocery store. I got gray hair, and they're looking at her like, why is she holding his hand? Like, he robbed the cradle. But she's just gorgeous. I get the benefit. But
wait, next time, just go say, grab a hold of him. That old guy looks mean. Say, come on, Dad. And nobody will have any problem at all if she just says, come on, Dad.
No, don't do that. But I will say this, and my wife's favorite verse, probably at least in her top three, is the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And to marry someone that genuinely wants to please God when no one's looking.
That's the key, when no one's looking.
And here's what I've fallen in love with my wife through the seasons, is I had no idea the benefit of marrying someone who wants to please God above all things. Because there are 1,000 ills that you save yourself from. She doesn't care whether I'm on this platform. She doesn't care what my reputation is. She cares whether I'm righteous, whether I'm holy, whether I'm honest, whether I'm genuine. And vice versa, I've got to see her walk through the pressures of raising children, interacting with in-laws, family dynamics in such grace and purity and forgiveness, with such compassion, that I had no idea that she was even capable of that until the circumstances presented themselves. And then Jesus showed up through her. And I went, oh my goodness, if you would not have responded in a heart stance that you did, I would have probably got off here. I might have got offended. I might have had a wrong interpretation. And instead of bolstering each other for our rights, for our prominence, to get our honor, if Jesus, you want to please him above all things, you end up falling in love with each other again in the different periods of life after you go through periods of struggle, too, where you don't feel as much.
So that's why in the heavy attraction on the front end, that is not what wins the day. And there's so much energy on that on the front end. And the guy can compromise a little, and the girl goes, we'll make it work. He's just so cool. It won't work if he is not going hard for God, and you're pulling him along, or vice versa. Right. And they're struggling. Why do we have to do that? Why? This is going to be problems. Because, again, in the areas of conflict, money, pressures, the 10 areas I mentioned earlier. Okay, let's go to paragraph C. The point of dating is a discovery process. I'm using dating as a defined, committed relationship, not a casual, having a dinner with somebody to check them out. That's not what I mean by dating. I'm talking about dating a committed, exclusive relationship that's public, meaning the guy is not just telling her, hey, I'm committed to you, and then over there he's telling another girl the same. He's saying it publicly, so there can't be two commitments, that he's being direct about it. And I believe that the point of dating isn't to have fun with somebody who's cute for a year or two. It's to discover if that's the person that you want to marry. That's the point of dating. In the secular world, the point of dating is to have fun with somebody attractive for a year or two, then move on to the next one. That is disastrous. That is not the culture of the kingdom. That's not what we're talking about at all. Paragraph one, the purpose is to get acquainted with their life vision, their values, their personality, and the real point to determine, do you want this to go? I have the word to courtship. I mean to engagement. And it's very dangerous to view dating through the secular media. The media is full of it. The two people, they're attracted, fireworks, they find their soulmate. They do all this stuff together. They get engaged, involved physically. Then a year or two later, they move on. That is a disastrous paradigm. Don't become committed to a person if you're not thinking, hey, I'm in the process to seeing if you're the one that I'm going to marry. That's the purpose of the dating. If not, don't go there. Don't experiment and play around, pick up a few bruises and give a few bruises to somebody. Don't do that. That's Don't defraud one another in that way, but stay reserved until there's a dating relationship that you're thinking, this might be the one.
Every date's a potential mate.
Every date is a potential mate. Because your mother said that. Your aunt said it.
My aunt said that. But don't say that to the person if you go on a date with them. Just keep that in your heart. But use that as a principle of wisdom.
Well, I think if it's the coffee, the one-off, that's not what she's talking about. But if you're going to really date them, it needs to be this. I mean, it really does need to be that. Okay, paragraph 3. I recommend very strongly not to kiss in the dating stage. Now, the TV says it the media says it way different. Paul says it's good for a man not to touch a woman. He's talking about a man and woman not married is what he's talking about. I strongly recommend not kissing in the dating stage. Because in the dating stage, the point is to find out where their values, their visions, how they interact, those kinds of things I have written down there. I don't want to go through it all, but I've got it written several times. You're in a discovery time, and when you get in that discovery time, look at here, a sentence or two later, it's so easy to confuse the pleasure of physical touch with love. So you're in a dating relationship, and just the pleasure of touch, you think, oh, I love you. You love the touch. And you really do kind of love them for a minute. Well, not exactly. It confuses the whole process of discovery. It makes it very complex and distorted. And then there's bonds that create. Then your values aren't in sync, but the physical bonds are being created. But the spiritual values, then you got to pull back. Then you miss him. You can't live with him. You can't live without him. But the values aren't in sync. Though he says he's a Christian or she says she is, but they're not walking it out, not really, not in the way that you are. I mean, they may go to heaven when they die, but that's not enough. You want to marry a woman or a man that's pursuing the Lord hard, not someone who going to heaven when they die and they're just going to do what they do between now and then.
And I just want to say that to the men out there, I'm raising sons, but you guys are the gatekeepers, not the women. Women are too, but you're the gatekeepers.
And what do you mean by that?
I mean you hold the standard. You are the one that says we're not going to kiss until we get engaged or even married. You be the one that leads in that way. Don't wait for her to say, I think we shouldn't, you know. You be the one that says we're not going to go sit in a dark parking lot in a car alone. You be the one to go, let's go back to your parents' house and sit on the couch when they're in the other room. You be the gatekeepers.
That's right. We've heard too many stories. I looked my sons in the eye, and I said, I better never hear this story about you, of the guy trying to wear down the girl.
Wait, say that again.
On the issue of boundaries.
And
I looked my sons in the eye, and I go, you bear the onus of holding the boundaries.
Wait, you know
setting
what?
Them.
It could be that pointing down there. Yeah. There
setting them. Holding them, you know, and cherishing them in your heart. It's not going to be you are pushing and pushing and pushing, and she's doing the best she can, asking four friends, what do I do about the
wearing
guy?
Wearing her down, wearing her down, Bible verses. Well, the grace of God, he'll cover, cover me. Come on. No! I thought you loved me. I do. Why are you doing this?
Exactly.
The guy needs to be the one telling the girl, no, we're not going there.
Oh, she will respect you. If you don't, you'll confuse her. You say you want to follow hard after Jesus, but you're sending all the confusing
signals.
She'll
still marry you, but she won't fully trust you.
She won't fully trust
you.
That's
for sure. Not under pressure. She won't fully trust your leadership. And then you'll think, why are you trusting me? Well, look at your last 4 years together. Why should she trust your leadership? You're the one that gave her the evidence not to trust you. Moving on. Paragraph 4. To put it simply, don't kiss before you get the engagement ring.
Wait, can I say something, Mike, just real quick?
Wait, I got to finish this. Don't take your clothes off till after the wedding. Go ahead.
Okay.
I had to get that out. Go ahead.
Well, I want you to say that again.
No, I said it once.
No, you've got to say
you
that.
Say
that's
it
too
next.
Good. That's too good.
She has to say it.
But guys, I made that statement. Rachel made that statement. This is doable for you. This isn't insurmountable. For us to say that you're the gatekeepers, you know, 100 years ago, a guy would have never thought it was any other way but that. Because you had to look a father in the eye and promise him you were going to care for their daughter and maintain your dignity. And the way that you showed that you were fit for marriage is that you had the self-control to honor his daughter. And so don't go, oh, I know our culture is so jacked up. You don't want to go that way. You want to get it in your spirit right now, no matter your past, no matter what you did in a bad way. And if you've been stumbling on this issue, draw the line now. Start right now. That girl across from you will respect you for it, and you get the courage to walk this out. Don't take that deep sigh. I heard the whole thing go, oh, that's a heavy. No.
That isn't heavy.
Uh-uh. That's easy. You can do this. And if you do it, you'll be the better for it.
It's only heavy because the secular culture is so inundated in the church. It is so normative in the kingdom for the guy to be the standard bearer. It's so normative to do that. Okay, number four again, to put it simply, don't kiss before you get the engagement ring and don't take your clothes off till after the wedding. And all guys say, well, we'll take off a little bit, but we won't do this, we won't do that. No, you got 50 years to be married, 50 years, maybe longer. I mean, my point isn't just wait, it's more than just wait, it's develop a resume with that woman when she sees you under pressure, the sexual temptation, desire pressure, and you obey God when you know she knows you love her like crazy, you're engaged, you're obeying God. Later, 5 years later, when you're on a business trip, and they say, oh, I hear that real cute girl who joined the company, she's not nervous. She goes, I know how he acts under pressure. He was crazy about me, and he wouldn't yield. I'm not jealous. Then you come home and you don't have that other argument. Then the other argument, it goes on. And it's because of bad leadership in the early days. It really is. It carries over to so many other issues later on in the marriage. It's critical. So it's not just wait. No, it's develop a resume with that woman about your leadership. That's what you're doing, as well as growing in the spirit of your personal life.
And I just want to say, guys, you have everything to do with securing your wife's heart in confidence, in your love, and in the sanctity of your marriage. You have everything to do with anchoring and securing her heart by the way that you carry your vessel, you know, before marriage and in during engagement and after marriage. You'll spend a lot less time backpedaling and working through issues later on down the road with your wife whose heart is anxious and unsettled if you'll do it right on the front end.
Right. You develop a resume. Just get that. You know, I've done a lot of marriage counseling over the years, and the guy says, she's just so jealous. I go, why is she jealous? I don't know. Her family, her mom was jealous. You know how they're, wait, dude, look me in the eye. She's jealous as a fruit of your leadership. She might have an emotional weakness in that area, but your leadership can take care of that. She's jealous because she has a reason to be jealous from her point of view. It's about you, not just about her family background and her mother. And a lot of guys, they go, what? I go, remember, what's the resume look like? The 3 years you dated, the 2 years, and the 4 years you've been married. What resume does she have about your leadership? I mean, you living under the Lord's leadership. Well, I've hit that plenty good. I have here. I know more than 10 couples, a few more than that. Godly men and women that were in the different, that have been involved in my ministry over the years, meaning I know them that well, up close and personal, that didn't kiss till their wedding day. We've had several in IHOP over the years. They did not kiss, not in their engagement. I'm not saying in the engagement, we got the ring. Come on, honey, give me a kiss. No, that's not the point. I think it's better not to do it there either. I think it's better not to do it there. I'm just going a little softer on that. Alan, reel me in if I'm getting a little liberal here. But I think it's better to go all the way and wait till the wedding day and kiss her at the altar. And I know at least 10 or 12 couples I know of personally that did that. And they said, we are so glad. Because, again, she trusts him so much more than that other couple. They were all good buddies. And that anyway, I can go on and on. Okay.
Or a day or two before the wedding. Sometimes it's pressure to kiss in front of 1,000 people for the first time. But, you know.
But if you do.
If you do, do it soft and gentle.
Don't make,
and sweet.
Don't like make out. That's not my, on the wedding day in front of, what I think.
We're just having fun.
That's just our opinion.
Just your thoughts, right?
Just some side commentary.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to skip courtship. I mean engagement. I mean, that's all self-evident in marriage. We're really talking about dating, and I'm just contextualizing it to engagement and marriage as well. Okay, let's turn to the top of page 3. We're going to our assignment and our small group time. This is a key takeaway point. I want to recommend strongly. I did this, not to the full degree I'm saying it here, but I did this because I was taught it by my youth leaders, that they taught us to write down on paper our commitments related to dating, to get before the Lord, open Bible, get counsel for some godly leaders, and write down what you're committed to do and what you're committed to avoid. And we all were taught to do that. So a lot of my friends did that. And what I'm going to suggest is that not only do you write that down, I'm talking about a page, one side of one page, it's less than that. There's only a couple paragraphs. There's not like, it doesn't go on and on. There's not that much to write. But I want to recommend every one of you do it. And then I want to recommend that you insist the person that you're dating does it. When they write that down, then here's the part that we did not do this part, but I'm recommending it because I know different ministries that have done it. Then you come in agreement with your dating, you come into unity, you add a phrase or take a phrase away depending on the merger of the two, and then you sign it together. You sign it before the Lord. And you take it one step further, then you go to a spiritual leader that you trust in the body of Christ, and you say, here is our commitment. You have the permission anytime you want, randomly, to ask us if we're keeping it. You can ask us anytime, hey, are you keeping number 3 and number 5? And they, again, some of them are commitments of activities to do, and others are activities to avoid. And so I had one of those papers 37 years ago, and again, because a lot of people did, we were taught it, but it would have been better if when we talked, we would have signed it. That's even stronger, and showed it to a spiritual leader and gave them the permission to talk to ask us about point 2, point 5, any point they want, at any time they want. They random come up at a church service, hey, how you doing on point 3? Oh, point 3, that's a tough one. Yeah, we blew it, point 3. But you know what? We're repented. I mean, it's not like you're going to do everything perfect, but the accountability, and when you look each other in the eye, when you've signed a paper together before the Lord, it's way heavier. And a lot of guys say, well, or gals, I don't need to do that. They trust that in flight they'll sort it out. But their track record says they don't. They keep stumbling in flight. In real life, they don't think it through intentionally. They don't write it down. They don't verbalize it. They don't commit it. And they end up going, well, we just blew it again. And I would like our whole spiritual cult family, the culture here, for every guy and gal who dates has a dating commitment. And when a guy asks you on a date, I'm not talking about a coffee for the first time. That's not what I'm calling a date. You know, that's a meeting a time or two before you've made a commitment to one another. I put it earlier in the document, a pre-dating socializing. It's not about romance. You're a little bit attracted to each other, a little bit intrigued with each other. You're not committed. That's fine to do 2 or 3 of those. Don't let some guy do 25 of those with you. But 2 or 3 of those to figure out if you want a date or not. And by the way, I skipped that point earlier. And if you get in one of those, hey, let's have a coffee for an hour and get acquainted, there's no intimate talking and there's no touching in that. And not even intimate talking. Some guys will do that. They'll do the 3rd one, the 4th one, the 5th one. It's like, wait. You don't need 5 to figure out if this is something we should do or not. And again, if you officially commit to date, and again, you make a statement, you make a commitment, and it's public, meaning, I don't mean you announce it at a meeting, but it's not secretive, so the guy can have 2 or 3 of those going on at the same time is the point. It's known is the point. But at that point in time, when you say, okay, it's official, then it should be normative. I want this to be normative this time next year, where the guy asks the girl, I want to see your dating commitment. And she goes, I don't have one. Say, well, let me help you write one. Or the other way around. You ask the guy, I want to see your dating commitment. I'm going to sign it with you. And he goes, what's that? And say, well, it's just what you're intentional about. And you can explain it to him in about 2 minutes and say, I don't want to have a defined, official, intentional, regular, romantic oriented. I mean, it may not turn to full into a marriage, but you're checking it out. It's got that orientation to it. And that's the point. You don't want that with somebody who's not going to be equally yoked with you in the Lord, who's not going the same place as you are spiritually. You really want that. And I want a girl to say to a guy, I don't want a formal commitment until we sign that paper. Or I want the guy as the gatekeeper to say to the girl, I'm going to lead you in this, and we're going to sign that paper together, and we're going to go share it with a leader and give them permission to talk to us. Okay, paragraph B. So there's activities to pursue and activities to avoid. I have a few activities to pursue, just some suggested ones. I don't mean everyone, these need to be on every one of your papers. When you make your individual dating commitment paper, I got three or four of them here to pursue. And number two, I got three or four of them to avoid. And these are suggested. My point being, in a few moments, we're going to meet in small groups. And you're going to, in a group, add to this. The ones that you say, well, they're not on his list. These four bullet points are going to be up on the PowerPoint in a minute. We're going to walk away with about 20 bullet points for each one of these, or what, maybe we won't have that many. But then I want you guys to have all of them so you can go develop your dating commitment paper or whatever you call it. And so my point is it's thought through. It's intentional. Why is it intentional? You're thinking about developing a romance with her with the idea of marrying her. It needs to be intentional. This is way too serious to be casual. And she needs to know it's intentional and vice versa. And you need to be in the light with another leader seeing what you've said with permission to be able to talk to you about it. Can you guys want to make any comments on that? Okay. We had real clear things. Because again, my leaders taught me to write them. I had a number of things. We would not be alone. We made a commitment. We would only be alone in public. And we went to Denny's more times than not. That's where I got my caffeine addiction, was at Denny's, because we didn't have much money. But boy, I could drink that coffee. And we'd talk for hours at Denny's. And it's really hard to get tempted at Denny's. It just really is. And I mean, she was so beautiful, and we were talking, and wow, and I was waxing eloquent, or so I thought, and winning her heart, and it was completely safe. And the other place we did it a lot was her kitchen at her house. We would sit at the table and talk for hours. And when you have that buzzy feeling, you get a table, a chair, you don't care where you're sitting, man. You're so happy, you don't even care what you're doing. And so, and her parents would be in the room talking about zero temptation. Her dad is about 20 feet away. I could hear the TV through the door. Not a chance, not an ounce of temptation. But we really connected. And another thing, a way you connect, is with other people, meaning the only time we talked was not just alone. We would have two or three others. We would be sharing and finding out about each other in the name of fellowship, meaning that counted as time together. It's like, well, if you're not totally alone, it's not time together. I learned more about her and her about me in those times very differently than other times. So don't write those off as, well, those aren't real. No, those are real. You're talking, you're sharing, you're interacting. You're celebrating somebody else's values and understanding of the Lord. You're challenging. You're interacting. There's a lot going on that pertains to dating in that kind of context. You got any comments? She was the first one to kiss me, though. Is it true? Sweetheart.
Was it? Okay. Yes.
Thank you. Okay,
let's go. It's a little peck on the cheek.
Well, it was a kiss. It was a peck on the cheek, but it was a kiss.
Tiny little peck on the cheek.
I know. She just reached over with. And I went, oh. But she did it. I mean, I took a step back, and she took a step forward, and I said, I'm not
but
ready.
But you held the boundaries, Mike. You held the boundaries.
Well, yes, I did. I got, because it was right when I drove home, and I sped. I almost got a ticket. I was pretty excited. But anyway, I went, whoa. Because we were determined this and this and this, and that. It was just, woo. Not the same. Not the same. Okay. Paragraph three. Paragraph three. I urge the ladies. No, this is your, actually the one that you were saying. So this is, we got to get serious. Yeah.
This one.
Number three.
Yeah, we hit it.
We hit it?
We hit it. As far as guys taking notice.
When did we hit it?
We hit, what's it?
Oh, yeah. I didn't think we hit it. Okay, go ahead.
I stand corrected, my friend. This is the issue. The big elephant in the room with dating these days is, what do we do with pornography? The issue of pornography. And I know the statistics are it's not a male problem alone, that it's male and female today, but by far the majority of it's male. And so I would encourage you ladies to ask when you go to date, when you go to say that we're committed to each other, to ask them if they're struggling with pornography and to ask them if they've looked at it while you've gone out on your precursory dates. And if they have, I would encourage you to draw the line. I just want to say that. I'm saying that for two reasons.
And what's that mean, draw the line?
To say that, you know what, this isn't going to work. You need to have a track record of freedom before we enter into this relationship. Here's why I'm saying it. Marriage does not cure pornography.
It does not cure
Jesus pornography. Jesus does in the power of the Holy Spirit.
No, marriage does not cure sexual problems. It does not at all.
And the reason why I say this, we've got to quit talking about pornography like it's detached from dating and marriage. It's destroying marriages.
Right.
It's destroying
Christian
families.
Lots
and we've got to hold the line. And guys, I look at my sons. I say, sons, and I quote that 1 Thessalonians 4:3 verse to my sons. I sit down with them and I go, you have to learn how to possess your vessel for honor. It's the will of God, your sanctification. And now's the time. Actually, the rite of passage from being a young man to a man is that you learn this, you triumph over this. I think we all have to remove the scandalization about pornography, like, oh my gosh, they saw it, because chances are your generation is going to be exposed to it at some level. You can drive down the road, Highway 70, and get exposed to soft porn just on the billboards. So you're going to be exposed to it. I'm not talking about putting shame. I'm talking about we have to draw the line, men, and you have to begin to start thinking about your families, your wife, the person you're going to date, and it's time to get free now, not thinking you're going to get free when you start dating and get married. Get free now. And here's why. I want to empower this community where the gals look at you in the eye and go, hey, are you struggling with this? You know, I need to know.
In a dating relationship.
Yeah, in a dating relationship. Yeah. Are you struggling with this? I need to know you're free. I need to know, and I want you to be honest with me. For the love of Jesus, be honest with me and dialogue about that. Here's what I'm saying. I want to free you up in your dating period to ask one another hard questions about this issue. Because the last thing you want to do is go through a one-year dating process, an eight-month engagement, get married, and find out 1 month into your marriage he's still addicted to pornography. You can't do that. We've got to switch this thing. We always say that we say that the light is getting lighter and the dark is getting darker. We've got to take these stands to allow light to get lighter. We can do this. We can call our men up higher. Our sons can win this war. Dads and sons can win it together. We can enter into these relationships clean and pure, feeling the grace of God, not the condemnation. I'm not talking about legalism. I'm talking about let's grow our sons up to walk in a better way and in a better path, because we're not talking about it in dating relationships and marriages, and it's destroying our homes. And so I want to encourage you, ladies, be empowered. You don't need to wait 2 years in before you wake up and found out you married a guy who's living a hidden double life. You need to find out, and I want to empower you to do that. And men, guys, I'm not hard on you. I'm right with you. I'm in the battle to raise my sons in purity. But I'm saying to you, it can be done. But if you're lazy about this issue and you just kind of drift thinking one day marriage is going to save you from it, it's not.
It's not.
You've got to right now embrace the grace of God and just be strong in the Lord and the power of his might. Be strong in the grace of God to get victory. And now's the time. So here's why I'm saying it, guys. Look over at your buddies and right now start groups to get free from this issue. Accountability in your dorm rooms, yes, in the houses, in the apartments you live in, and start getting free. I want my boys to have a vision for their wives now and be free for 10 years before they've ever met the gal. And so I want to encourage us to do that. I'm not talking about shame. I'm not talking about putting shame upon people, but having the honest dialogue and saying to the guys, we can do this.
because the point you've made so clear that the problem of pornography does not go away with marriage. There's a maybe a single guy thinks that's the hey, it will get solved. It doesn't get solved. It doesn't get solved by intentionally going through various steps for healing in it. And it is a marriage destroyer. It is not neutral. It is a marriage destroyer. Even though I know a number of marriages where the guy is entrapped in this and they stay married, but their interaction is so much lower and it's so heartbreaking and there's so many gaps in his spiritual leadership. I mean, they can still technically stay married and technically even do some good things, but they're operating at a 3, not a 10 or an 8. There's so many deficiencies they can't. I mean, yeah. Deficiencies, I'm talking about, we're all weak guys, we have deficiencies. I mean, within that grid, there's so many things they can't do if they're hooked to that. So guys, this isn't the sort of thing where hide it from the girl, and then you date 2 years, get engaged, get married, and all of a sudden out comes this, like, it is a lie that is so devastating to that lady because she is now married to a guy that cannot provide spiritual leadership in her home. And she's covenanted to him. Ladies, don't be soft on this area. You can say, Alan and Mike are insisting. I wouldn't ask you if it was me. That's They're right. making me ask you. I am making you ask them.
Because the marriage best I can. Bed cannot fulfill these unrealistic fantasies that are not real. They're not real. They can't bear that pressure. It's Get your mind free now so that when you enter that marriage bed, it's one of love. Not cloaked with a bunch of lust and perversion.
And you can't be a spiritual leader in your home. If you've got that defilement, you can't lead. There's so many things you won't even think to do that a spiritual That's leader right. would do. It's not even on your mind because you've got all this interference going on. So what he said about the marriage bed is a giant point. I'm talking about outside the marriage bed, everyday life. There's so much you won't even be thinking about providing leadership in. It won't occur to you because you'll have so much interference in your inner man that it won't dawn on you to even say or do or initiate certain things. And it's a devastating loss in a Christian marriage.
And the reason why I'm bringing it up so hard is we have, the Christian church has approached this like this is the insurmountable giant.
It's not.
And so nobody talks about it. We shout at each other, but we don't get real as far as relationship. This is not. I believe the grace of God is coming on the body of Christ to walk in a purity that rivals any generation in which the Lord has saved people. And so I want to encourage you, this is the time for purity, now more than ever. And that's aside from what you might have looked at in the past, let's push delete and let's begin to access the grace of God.
Okay, Roman numeral 4, what to look for in a spouse. We're in the middle of page 3. The most important issues is to be in unity with these areas I have written down here, to be equally yoked in your commitment to the Lord. I don't mean that you both believe you're going to heaven when you die. That's not what I mean by equally yoked. I mean you have the same level of intensity of the vision you have to have Jesus central in your life. And if the guy or the gal is drawing back and you got to coax them and constantly talk them in to going hard after God, that is a huge red flag because, again, after the first year or two and the novelty is worn off, you got 50 years to go under that guy's leadership. Or the man, you got 50 years of pulling this lady who doesn't want to go there with you. And it goes 50 years and the novelty wears off. You don't want to take shortcuts on these areas. These are vital, vital areas. And this is what really romance, where it comes from. Okay, paragraph C. The most important question is not, will I be attracted to this man or woman for the rest of my life? The most important question is, will I respect this man or woman the rest of my life? Because if you respect them, you will love them. Now, I took this straight off of a Dave Schleicher article. He has an article on the website that's so good. I grabbed it. It was excellent. Good job, Dave. Top of page 4. Okay, So you're going in unity after these various things that I have listed. I don't want to take time to read them. And again, the physical attraction, that's obvious that that's what people want. But I tell you, that really has to be second. It really, really does.
And Mike, I just want to add something that, you know, when you're finding a spouse or finding someone that you think could be potentially someone and you're going out and you're realizing and you're seeing those qualities, you know, like Do they love Jesus when no one's looking? Do I laugh with them? You know, am I attracted to them? That may be on your one of your lists.
That's cool to be attracted.
Are they humble? Are they teachable? This is all from my husband's repertoire of wonderful information on this. But there are, when you find that you're actually equally yoked, you're like-minded, your values, all those things, they're going to have issues. And so as I've counseled young adults, you know, they're struggling with the issues. And everyone, and I know you know it, it's cliche, everyone has issues. But the truth is, you're just going to trade one set of issues for another. So as you find someone, because I've counseled and they've got all these qualities and they're still struggling, either it's not the peace of Christ, so therefore you don't go forward, you just have that red flag. But when you've got that fear that comes in of there's issues, really realize you're going to just trade one set of issues for another. It's really just the reality. There's no perfect person out there that you're going to get with.
They don't exist.
It's not necessarily that we're ever going to find somebody that's issueless. That person doesn't exist. But it's when you recognize when
you
something comes your way, how do you handle it? Do you agree with God and His Word? Yes, that was sin, what I just did. And do you repent of it? And do you seek ways to not go there, to not do that again? That's the issue. Yes. So if you were waiting around to find that perfect, issueless person, you'll never get married, okay? You won't. But if that person with issues is addressing those issues, I mean, not like, you know, like a whole multitude of them, but, you know, maybe one or two that they're still working through, then pay attention, because that's an admirable quality that person is repenting of their sin, that they're seeking wise counsel, that they're extending forgiveness, that they're asking for forgiveness. That's the kind of person that you'll be attracted to.
It's good.
Top of page 4. What do you look for in a spouse? Paragraph E. Again, we're talking character traits. Because that's where the offense happens, because of the character traits, the lack of them, or that's where the respect that is the that seedbed of affection. Number E and F. I don't want to read it all, but I just want you to jot that down. Women towards men and men towards women. You want to watch. How do they act under pressure? How do they act when they're put down? When someone puts them down, whether it's you or somebody else, when they're put down, how do they respond? That's huge, determining your family culture. If that guy or gal is hyper defensive every time something doesn't go just in affirming them, you are going to have a really tough family culture. But, I mean, you can have these deficiencies, but the guy or gal says, just like the pornography, there could be struggles, but the guy or gal says, I am committed to walk through this, and I'm committed to get help, and I'm committed to be open, and yes, I have a new beginning every day, and you can get free of all this stuff, but these are things when you're dialoguing, you're saying, you know, you're so cute, but we're not getting married right now, because when I look at E and F, there's some things that it's not just you're deficient in, because we're all deficient. I don't think you're committed to changing these things. And you got to be committed to changing Amen. The things I have in E and F. You don't have to be there, but you've got to have an eagerness to change these. I mean, I look at some of these, and I'm still struggling and coming up short in them, but I'm committed to them. The commitment is what makes you equally yoked, not the attainment. You come up short is not what equally yoked is, the fact that you're reaching for the same values and the same characteristics. But how, do they respond with bitterness, with self-pity? Paragraph E, when they're under pressure, do they try to escape with different drugs, food, excessive entertainment? F, are they good listeners? Do they rush you? Do they interrupt you? Are they multitasking while you're trying to talk to them and they're not even listening to you, or half and half? What kind of entertainment do they like? Are they lazy? Are they self-starters? Are they complainers? Are they mostly grateful? And again, they may be complainers, but they say, I am warring against this. And then you could have some peace if you see follow through. If they call it a failure, but if they go, that's just how my father was and that's how I am. Alert, that is a bad situation, because that will destroy your family culture. That will hurt your children. That will hurt your marriage. The affection will be long gone in a couple of years with a complaining spirit in the context of a marriage, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, let's go to Roman numeral 4. I mean 5. Some common questions. We'll just touch a couple of these, And again, we have so much more, even little points on the website. The document's not there yet, but we'll have it up there pretty soon. Okay, common questions. One of the big questions is, does God pick my mate? Does God have somebody sovereignly picked for me out there? And I'm spending my time seeking him, trying to find out who the mystery man or woman is. And I don't think that's the right answer. And again, I'm going to appeal to Dave Schleicher. He wrote an article, How to Marry the Right Person for the Right Reasons. I have that on paragraph A. And he goes pretty strong. I'll let him say what he wants to say on it, but that the Lord lets you have the choice. And I think there are times where the Lord intervenes in a sovereign way, and he has surprises showing his sovereignty in it. But when I was discovering that I would marry Diane, I wasn't saying, that's the mystery woman I finally found. Somebody said, how did God tell you to marry her? I go, I just really liked her. I really liked her. She really liked me. I don't mean I just liked looking at her. I did. I liked talking to her. Talking to her is way more important. And I believed in her values. I believed in her, where she was going, in her financial values, what she wanted to do with Jesus, what she wanted to do with life. I loved her values, and I liked talking to her. I liked her. She liked me. And our parents said, go for it. That means that's God's will. Someone said, God tell you? I go, not more than that. Not any more than that. And I believe that God's saying, I have given you a will and a personality. I want you to choose the one you want, and I will intervene if I have displeasure in it. Is there one person in the earth that's only for you? I don't believe that. I believe there's 1,000 people you could fall in love with and have a good marriage. You can only have one, but I believe there's 1,000 of them out there. And my point being, it takes away the mystery of trying to find the secret formula to find him far away. He might be right in front of you. Well, I don't know, I'm not that attracted to him. Well, start talking to him. You may be far more attracted to him after you start talking to him. Because I tell you, as cute as she is, I really like her because of how she talks. That means a whole lot more to me. Anyway, so you get how all that works. Okay.
Because the principles are even more powerful than the person. The biblical principles towards love. At the end of the day, look around. Every brother and sister, you're going to love them for all eternity. The biblical principles bring forth love. And you might say to yourself, you may even be in a marriage going, you know what? I don't know if she's the one. She's the one.
If you like
said
her,
I do,
if you,
you
like
said
her,
I do,
she
she's
likes
the
you.
One.
Oh, you're saying that.
You said
more.
I do, she's the one.
Yeah,
and
she
I've
is the
seen,
one then.
And the Lord, if you follow his ways, if you abide in the vine, he will produce much fruit. It has to be that way.
Yeah, the guy, I've heard it over the 40 years. I don't know, we're married. I don't know if she's the one. I go, I promise you. That I get what you're saying. She is the one.
She's
go,
the one.
The Lord tell you? I go, absolutely, he told me. I got a bunch of Bible verses. You went to the wedding altar, she's the one. But I'm talking about this mysterious who, and if you like her, she likes you, you have the same values, you have godly people in your life, your parents, leaders love you, they go, this is good, there is no check, that's the one. It's really that simple, it's not so mysterious. So somebody says, paragraph B, what about prophetic dreams? I think there's that occasionally is helpful. Almost always, in my experience over the last 40 years of watching it, it's almost always not helpful. But sometimes it is helpful. I've seen it helpful a couple times. But by far the majority, it's confusing. It's not right. And so when someone has a dream, say, if you need a dream to marry him, don't marry him. You don't want to marry him? Well, if God tells me to. You mean if he forces you to, you will. Anything for the Lord.
No, that is great. That is great.
If you need a dream,
it's
not good. It's not. Something's broken already if you need a dream. If you don't like him and he didn't like you and you don't like talking to each other and you don't have the same values and you need a dream, bad news. But in reality, again, I'm saying this seriously, though it's funny. I mean, I know hundreds of situations, most always the dreams were a hindrance and not a help. Occasionally, I admit, there's that one time it was, wow, that was really set up in a unique way by the Lord. I mean, I have had these X amount of prophetic experiences with the Lord related to a movement, but I didn't have anything like that related to the most important choice of my life. By far the most important choice of my life, obviously, it's my salvation experience. But after that, it was her, not Kansas City and the movement. The person you marry is the biggest decision. No dreams, no visions, no prophecies, no nothing for the most important decision of my life. And when it comes to a movement, and as I've told different stories, prophetic stories, people go, they hear these movement prophecies, supernatural things, and they want one to buy a house, buy a car, get married, and have kids. I don't have those for my domestic life. Those are movement prophetic events, not personal. When it's coming to buy a house, buy a car, get married, you got to do it the normal way. You know, that's just how it is. And so don't confuse prophetic stories with your domestic life. And you're, you know, how many guys do I know? They're waiting for God to give the dreams, number one, that's a confusing way to approach it. Number two, this isn't true always. So I want to be careful I don't overstate this. I tell the guy, I go, God, you're hiding under a prophetic banner because you're afraid. You're afraid if you ask her, she'll say no. You're afraid if you'll ask her, she'll say yes. You're afraid you'll ask her, then you'll get there and regret it. You're afraid you'll like it. You're just afraid of, there's 10 things you're afraid of. And you're hiding under a prophecy. Just don't do that. Just go up to her. Again, you can have the 2 to 3 coffees. And again, you don't talk deep at that level. It's kind of the exploratory thing. There's nothing wrong with that. I encourage people to do that kind of stuff. Not to wait till you hear an angel shout before you take someone out and have a coffee with them. Just to figure out, say, I think you're interesting. I just thought, hey, how you doing? You know, it's not a big deal. It's not a big statement, and everybody didn't have to talk about it. Did you see them there at the coffee shop? Oh my gosh, I knew it. No, don't do that. Leave them alone. Because if people do that, seriously, then everyone's afraid of the reputation. I can't even talk to the guy or girl because it's a big story. And that's, it's natural, but it is a bit childish, although it is natural for that to happen. It happens all over the earth. But people need to be able to talk, have an interaction, see where it's at without people all figuring out what it means and talking about it. And so I want to encourage you not to wait for an angel blast or a prophetic word. Just go have the coffee with her. Or her, girl, go have the coffee with a guy. Oh my gosh, I can ask him. Yes! But whoever asks has to pay. That's how it works. Yes, you can go ask him. Hey, would you... Wait, you're... No, I can't do it because I'm the guy. You be the girl and ask me. So...
Hey, Mike, you want to have a cup of coffee?
Yeah, I'm really busy. Just whatever. No, keep going. We're play acting. You know I'm going to say yes. That's
okay,
part of
that. Okay, so 30 minutes... Cup of coffee, I'll treat you.
Okay, why not?
Yeah, that's what I say. Let's do it.
There's nothing wrong if a girl does that. And the girl says, I find you interesting, and hey, I'd like to get to know you. That's not bad. That's like, she said he was interesting and wanted to get to know him. Praise God, about time she said it. It's not like a stigma. There's nothing wrong. It's not anti-biblical. It's not socially wrong. There's nothing wrong with that. And, I mean, if you'd have asked me to marry you, I would have said yes. Anyway, here we go.
And you know what, Mike? My wife asked me out for the first time.
See, we got the same deal. The kiss, the date, here it is. She asked you out, for real.
Sort of. It was a Sadie Hawkins dance, and so the girls have to ask
the guy. I don't even know if young people know what that is. I think that's... Oh, they do.
The girl has to ask the guy.
Okay.
That's the bottom line. But you know what? It helped me. I'm telling you, it really helped.
Scared little thing.
Because once I knew she asked me,
shaking
like
over
me,
there,
was...
all scared no, to
no,
death
no,
of
no.
that little thing.
No. She was so cute. Actually, she asked me, said, what are you doing Saturday? And I said, well, I have a canoe trip with a group of guys. And she goes, oh, no. It's okay. Then I go, no, ask me. I literally thought she was going to ask me to move her apartment or take her to the airport because that's what you ask Christian guys to do. Because they're the only ones that say yes, but they never get the date.
That's because they never ask for the date. That's why they don't get
no,
the date.
No. Right. That's the flip side. So here's what happened.
Wait, you were so afraid anyway. You were shaking
a
leaf.
Yes, you were.
I was.
Actually, she was shaking because it's not her personality to ask. And so she was trembling, going, well, you don't have to. And I go, no, ask me. I'm thinking sweaty guys on a river or a cute girl moving her apartment. Even if she doesn't like me, that's way better. And so So I said, no, what do you need? She goes, well, there's a dance on Saturday. It's a Sadie Hawkins dance. And so, you know, I just want to know what you're doing. And so I started smiling. I said, are you asking me out on a date? Wait, and did she say yes? She went, but we have to. She was like, we have to ask you out. It's Sadie
Hawkins. Made me do
like,
it. They made
like,
me do it.
And I said, no, you're asking me out. But here's the thing. It clued me in. And immediately I said, you know, it's, what was it, like Monday? I said, why wait to Saturday? What are you doing Wednesday?
And the boy got with it. I mean, one little
and
conversation.
And we went out Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday before Saturday got there. So I'm just saying, ladies, it helped me. I was thick, slow, oblivious.
It helped that he was a really good roller skater. Because we went roller skating on a group date. He was really good.
That's the kind of things you don't tell people.
See, no. In my world, that's not like a huge plus. That Alan's a roller skater. I'm going to share that.
No, she didn't say we played tennis the first night. She went right to the roller skating thing.
You little roller skater, you.
A little feistiness here. Followed by ballet.
Synchronized swimming, too.
Forget it. Okay.
Please keep us on track, Mike.
Okay, we're at the end of this. I'm going to hit last point. Last point is paragraph H. Paragraph H, last point. And then we're going to have a group. Everybody going to get up for 5-6 in a group for 20 minutes. We're going to time it. We're going to do 4 questions. You're going to fill out the page. Before we get to H, I'll explain this to you. You're going to fill out page 5. You're going to pick somebody to be the writer. And they're going to write down the answers. And to be the leader of the group. And so you're each going to give a minute on each one of those questions. Because again, 5-6 people, we got 5 minutes per question. And then after that, you're going to bring your written answers on your paper. You're going to stand in that aisle and that aisle. And we're going to hear them. And we're going to put them on the board, on the PowerPoint. And then we're going to have a document together of what we think are the things that we should avoid, the things that we should pursue, the things we liken in somebody, etc. Those kinds of things. But I want to hit paragraph H and end with that. It's the idea of being single for the Lord. I got 2 points here that I want to make. The Bible honors in a very, very powerful way being single for the Lord. Meaning, in some settings, if somebody is living single for the Lord, people ask questions. You know, what about this? What about this? What about that? What about this? And there is a very powerful precedent for being single for the Lord, like Jesus, John the Baptist, John the Apostle, Paul the Apostle, Elijah. It's a fairly good group, really good group. And the Bible makes it clear that's a gift and it's something that should be honored and celebrated. And I want us to celebrate that in our midst. And then the second point and final point I wanted to make is there are a number of folks in our spiritual family, some in the room right now, that are single, and they don't want to be single. And so they're single because they want to be single for the Lord, and they have a certain stigma sometimes, and I don't want that. I want us to celebrate. And others that they're not 21 anymore. They're a few years older than that, and they're 30, they're 40, they're 50, whatever age. They don't want to be single. And a meeting like this is like terrible. They're going like, oh, I hate these kind of meetings because they have, not all of them, but a number of them, a sense of loss in their heart. They had a dream when they were 10, 12, 14 years old of their family and their romance. And now they're 40, they're 50, they're whatever age. And they've died to something and suffered it and grieved it, but nobody ever saw it because there was never a day they died to it. And they carry something in their heart that I want us to acknowledge and be tender about. And that's not a small thing. That's a huge thing. So we have the 2 very different situations with folks that are single, because we're talking to single young folks, mostly young folks that want to date. But I want to recognize those other 2 and at least acknowledge them and make a statement about them before we move on. Okay, final statement. Any one of you guys?
Okay. Be intentional. Be intentional about your dating, about your choice for a future spouse. Be intentional about all of your life, especially the big decisions.
So let's all stand. Okay, we want you all involved in this for 20 minutes.